Those who believe, Jacques, that we might have been seeded from extraterrestrials, regardless of where they come from, do you accept that theory, that possibility?
I'm not a biologist. I'm not a molecular biologist. We don't know where DNA came from. The components of DNA are, of course, natural, you know, natural elements. But those natural elements are found throughout the universe. It's possible that even that life could have appeared first on Mars. Again, it's not my own theory. It's a theory that people are seriously considering. We know that the collisions of asteroids with Mars could have ejected material that could have landed on Earth. And scientists have recovered Martian meteorites, especially in Antarctica, where it's easiest to find them. And there is still a debate about whether those meteorites may contain traces left by ancient life. So a lot of speculation is possible, a lot of hypotheses. The components of DNA or even bits of DNA itself could have come from the cosmos. That doesn't mean we were seeded by any intelligent species. It could be a natural phenomenon, but life could have first appeared outside the Earth and been projected to the Earth by meteorites.
The change in your thoughts, of course, went contrary to what the mainstream, if you can call it mainstream, ufologists would think of extraterrestrial life. Did they kind of shun you when that metamorphosis occurred?
Well, that's all right. You know, everybody's entitled to their own opinion. I think
sure.
That's the way, you know, research has to work. Similar with the skeptics, you know, the skeptics just don't want to look at the facts, and that's fine too. I think those are the same people who didn't want to believe that artificial satellites could be useful in science, same people who said computers were a waste of time. And, so, you know, those things change with time. I can understand people saying, look, if it's not terrestrial, it's got to be extraterrestrial. And that's a simple-minded approach to it. Well, it could be. It could be lots of other things. What the phenomenon is really saying is that we don't understand space and time. And that's really what's very, very interesting to me, is that it's an opportunity to learn something and to do some good physics and to look at new models in physics.
You came up with an incredible hypothesis in 1990 called Five Arguments Against the Extraterrestrial Origin of Unidentified Flying Objects. Let's just take a few moments while we have time this hour before we bring Paul Smith on. These are incredible points. I mean, you talked about unexplained close encounters are far more numerous than required for physical survey of the Earth. What do you mean of that?
Well, I didn't do a good job of explaining why I wrote that paper. People have assumed that, well, if I call the paper Five Arguments Against the Extraterrestrial Theory, it means that I don't believe in UFOs.
Right.
Of course, that's not the case at all. In science, when you have an hypothesis, you must look at the things that contradict your hypothesis. That's the first rule. You can't just lobby people to believe the same thing you believe. That's not the way science works. It would be a little bit too easy. This is not politics. This is science. So my question was, what are the things that any extraterrestrial theory has to account for to be a valid theory? And one of the there are a number of problems, you know, without going into all the details.
Sure.
First, this is not a new phenomenon. This is a phenomenon that, as far as we can tell, has been with us throughout human history. It's much more complex and diverse than a survey of the Earth by some civilization coming here. The appearance of the beings is consistent with human beings. they their appearance is somewhat different, but the witnesses say they can read emotions on their faces. These beings have two legs and two arms and one head with pretty much the same organs we do. Any biologist, and I've had extensive discussions with zoologists, and I've asked them, was it a foregone conclusion that human beings would be the dominant intelligent species on Earth? And the answer is absolutely not. The octopus could have developed into something much more intelligent than human
sure.
beings.
I think the dolphin has.
Dolphins, yeah. Birds, some birds, the use of tools by birds is remarkable. And they did not develop into the most dominant or intelligent species, but that's probably an accident. And we don't know what's going to happen after the human race. And certainly we would not expect, and people have disagreed with me, and you know, in honest disagreement about this, but you would not expect a creature from evolution on another planet to look so similar to us. So it could still be extraterrestrial, but you need to expand the assumptions you're making about it. And then there is a number, as you were saying, the sheer number of landings. We know that only one case in 10 or 20 is ever reported. And we know that if the occurrences are independent of a witness being there, which would be the case in a survey of the Earth, then we need to extrapolate for the fact that people go to bed at night and that there are no observers out there. And you reach numbers that are extraordinary. And with the technology we have now, if we were to explore a planet that had life on it, intelligent life, we could do it with something, you know, the size of a small car in orbit around that planet, and we might land a few times, but we certainly would not need to deploy the kind of technology that seems to be deployed here, if it's a technology.
And you know, their ability, their whatever propulsion system or their ability to manipulate space to get here, to me, probably points out the fact that there's something here that we really don't understand, that is way beyond the simple extraterrestrial theories that we used to listen to years ago.
And that's what really keeps me going. That's why I haven't given up on the field. I love technology. My business is high technology. I have people in my office every day teaching me new things about technology and showing me that things I thought were impossible are now achievable. And so this phenomenon is a fascinating challenge. The idea that they have to be either terrestrial or extraterrestrial reminds me of, you know, if we were sitting here in the 12th century and we're looking at planets, well, we know planets move in the sky. So what could, if something moves, it has to be pushed by something.
Right.
There are only two things that could push planets around. That's either angels or devils, right? So you would say, well, half of us would argue that they are pushed around by angels, and the other half would argue they are pushed around by demons. Well, of course, now we've learned that they don't have to be pushed by anything. And we know a lot more about physics, and we understand that the movement of the planet is perfectly natural and is governed by fairly simple laws. And we don't need either angels or demons. Well, it's the same thing here. You know, UFOs are an indication that there is something about space and time that we don't understand. I think it goes beyond that. What the phenomenon really says is that our universe is a subset of something else.